news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. As I announced, As I announced in the previous hour, starting next week, my show will be moving to Saturdays from 10 to noon on Saturday here at iHub Radio. I've been talking, obviously, about the virus and a lot of the issues that we need to at least be aware of. I was talking about the stimulus package that was passed, and I found it really interesting. The president did his, I guess they're calling it a press conference or press availability or whatever with the task force yesterday. He's doing it every day now. And evidently he's doing it because as much as we want to hear from Dr. Fauci and Dr. Burks and the people who really are, like, who know, Fauci in particular was getting so much play on television. The president was not happy about that. And so the president decided he needed to do that because he can't do rallies anymore. And so, I mean, he would, but he can't. And so he decided that he should be the one who is apparently leading the task force, even though he appointed Mike Pence to do it. And I have to say, as much as I don't agree with Mike Pence on almost anything, and as much as I am in awe of the fact that he can stand there stoic, unmoving, and with no expression on his face for so long, how many people can actually do that? Have you ever watched the president when somebody else is speaking? He can't stand still. He moves his body back and forth, round, from one side to the other. He just can't help himself. And he's not really paying attention anyway. He hears just snippets of things, and then he'll jump back in and pick up on those snippets. It's really kind of embarrassing. But the point is, it's Pence who's supposed to be leading the task force, and at least Pence seems to understand what he's talking about. Anyway, I want to talk about, I was talking about the stimulus package, and the truth is, the biggest thing that the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi in particular, wanted to get into that stimulus package was oversight. Because, as I said, the amount of money that was allocated to help individuals and the amount of money that was allocated to help small business in particular, a much bigger amount of that bill, $500 billion, is going to big business. And Nancy Pelosi wanted to make sure there was at least oversight, that Congress would know how that money was being allocated, how that money was being used. Well, when the president signed the bill, he also signed what's known as a signing statement, which in fact says, as the president, I am supporting this legislation. I am not vetoing this legislation, but I am not going to abide by that one part of the bill that called for oversight committee. He is going to appoint his own oversight person. And if you'll recall, when he was asked about that last week in one of the press conferences, the president said, I am the oversight. Well, let me tell you why this is so important. Aside from the fact that Nancy Pelosi wants to make sure that all that slush fund money for big business is not just going to be given away for political favors or for political support or in ways that may not be appropriate with what was the intention of the Democrats and Republicans who passed that bill. Guess what the president can use that for? He can reward businesses in particular states. He can give money to various states for whatever reason he feels is appropriate given the way that money was allocated. Think what it means to a state, oh, let's say, like Florida, that he needs for re-election. If he starts giving money to businesses in Florida that help the Florida economy thrive, or a state like Pennsylvania where he needs the votes in Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin, or Michigan, where he's been trashing their governor. But what if he puts a whole lot of that money into the state of Michigan, into a business in Michigan, so that the economy in Michigan starts looking good and he can run for re-election based on the use of that money? This is where politics rears its ugly head. And what Nancy Pelosi was saying was, hey, we need, as representatives of the taxpayers, we need oversight about how that money's going to be used and how it's going to be allocated. And just the other day, the president is quoted as saying, oversight is a witch hunt. His favorite phrase, which he obviously learned during impeachment. I also was struck by the fact that the president said, I believe it was on Friday in his press conference, the press availability, the task force, in talking about how important it is that we get this under control as quickly as possible so that we can reopen the economy. The president actually said, these are his words, we were told we had to close the economy. We were told, as if he's not in charge. So he is pushing the responsibility for everything, either off on Pence, or off on the governors, or off on the task force, or off on anyone else he can find, so that if things don't go well, he doesn't have to take the blame. As if he is not the person who should be coordinating the kind of response that takes into account all of our citizens, not just the ones in states where they were nice to him. Now, I do want to share with you very quickly some things about the virus that I was not fully aware of, and you may not be fully aware of them either, so I'm going to share this with you. The list of symptoms for the virus has actually expanded. We've heard about the fact that fever, which may spike throughout the day or at night, fever, cough, especially a dry, hacky cough that doesn't bring up any phlegm, shortness of breath, where you literally feel as if there's like a weight on your chest when you try and breathe. Extreme fatigue may be the first symptom. If you feel like you just literally cannot function. Some people have been lightheaded and feeling weak before the chills, the fever starts. A lot of people are having chills that are known as rigors. It's spelled R-I-G-O-R-S, but it's the kind of chills that you just cannot control. You cannot get warm. And I will tell you, it helps if you do have somebody with you who is literally willing to wrap their body around your body, although they are then obviously exposing themselves to the fact that you may have the virus. Some people had headache and sore throat. Some people did get sick to their stomach with nausea or have diarrhea. And losing your sense of taste or smell, having absolutely no interest in eating. And there's also something known as conjunctivitis, which is often called pink eye, which can also be a symptom of something going on in your system. The main thing is the respiratory symptoms. but you can have other symptoms without the shortness of breath. And what you want to do if you do have any of those symptoms, stay away from the other people in your house. Wash your hands. Make sure that you are clean and taking as good a care of yourself as you can. And just understand that some people who are infected are spreading the virus and don't have any symptoms at all yet. Transmissions by people with no symptoms. And that's why you want to wear a mask when you're outside. And that's why you want to listen to your body. And if your symptoms get bad enough that you don't feel you can take care of yourself at home, call your doctor, call 911. It turns out, right, don't go to the ER because you're either spreading symptoms to other people who may not have the virus, or you may get it if you haven't already gotten it by people who did go to the ER who are infected. Now, I am sorry to say men are more likely to get this virus than women. Men are faring worse than women around the world. More likely to become seriously ill, and men who get seriously ill are more likely to die from this. On the other hand, more nurses are women, and therefore they are more at risk of getting it and bringing it home to their children. Meanwhile, the virus is also moving inland. There's no place in this country right now that is safe from it. At least 17 states are already reporting at least 1,000 confirmed cases in their state. And smaller communities are beginning to emerge as hotspots. Greenville, Mississippi, Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Large cities like New Orleans and Milwaukee and Detroit and Chicago, it is moving inland. Now, mayors and governors are clashing about what restrictions to put in place. In Oklahoma, in Massachusetts, in South Carolina, in Texas, some mayors are wanting to put severe restrictions in their community, and the governor is saying, no, we don't need that. Or the governors are saying, we want the whole state to be locked down, and the local mayor is saying, our citizens don't want to do that. 90% of the nearly 200 cities that have responded to a survey said they did not have a sufficient supply of masks. Nearly 90% of the cities that were in a survey said they didn't have an adequate amount of personal protective equipment for their healthcare workers. That's why you have government, if only the president understood that. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
So when during the week when I'm putting together all the notes for my show, and there's just so much going on, I end up with way more than I can get to. But I often put my own little cryptic comments on top of an item. So I'll find an item, from Axios or from Yahoo or whatever. I'll find an item, a news article that somebody posted up on Facebook, and I find things in that that I want to excerpt because I'd like to be able to talk about them. And then I sometimes put my own little cryptic quips. And I downloaded a couple of items this week that I titled, Now I Understand Why the South Lost the Civil War. which isn't funny, really. So in the state of Georgia, the mayor of a town called Cumming, Georgia, announced that he was canceling the city's social distancing order, which included restaurants and bars. And despite the fact that there were at that point almost 5,000 confirmed cases of the virus in the state of Georgia, he said, "A large portion of our public doesn't want government mandating the recommendations of public health officials." He said he was going to add 150 police officers to enforce the ban, but people reacted strongly on social media that they were becoming a police state. Now, that's the mayor of Cumming, Georgia. Meanwhile, the governor of Georgia reopened the beaches this weekend because there were local shelter-in-place mandates from a number of cities, not Cumming, obviously. And the governor, Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, he did an executive order that suspended the enforcement of any local ordinance or order that had been issued by any local authority since March 1st relating to the virus. He thus lifted any local ordinance or order that had closed or restricted access to the beaches of Georgia. Now, he did say, this was just to allow people to exercise outside as long as they maintain at least 6 feet of distance from other individuals. But nobody's going to be enforcing that. I'm telling you, this is why the South lost the Civil War. And there are a lot of people in this country who are saying, I'm not going to abide by those orders. Government can't tell me what to do. Government can't tell me I have to stay in my house. Government can't tell me I can't go across a state line. And yet there are states where they have local law enforcement people at the state line stopping people from the other state from coming in because the other state has more virus numbers. Now, I will tell you, the idea that marijuana stores are considered essential and therefore staying open, which I got to tell you is okay with me. But libraries are closed. Bookstores are closed. So books are not essential. Obviously, bread and milk and getting gas is essential during the shutdown just so that you can have a life, so that you can, in fact, go to the store if you need to. Or get to a doctor if you need to. Why should it be easier to buy marijuana than a good book? Let me just tell you, I think both would be essential. However, okay, bookstores closed, along with all the other small businesses, but pot is considered essential. And I can understand that a lot of people use pot for medical reasons, and therefore it could be seen as important to be able to keep a pot store open, which is legal, the same way that you keep a drug store open. But gun stores? If you can't find toilet paper, get a gun. In March, the FBI processed a one-month record 3.7 million gun background checks. Last month included 5 of the top 10 days for background checks since the start of the background check system in 1998, 22 years ago. March was the second busiest month ever for gun sales. Interestingly enough, it trailed only January of 2013, just after President Obama's reelection and just after the Sandy Hook shooting. an NRA video on March 21st, an activist said, "If you aren't preparing to defend your property when everything goes wrong, you're really just stockpiling for somebody else." So if you want to protect your toilet paper, you better damn well get a gun. And the Trump administration has said guns are a critical activity and that the firearms industry is a critical service that should be allowed to continue operating, even though other businesses have been told to shut down. LA County Sheriff declared guns and ammunition essential based on the advisory from the Department of Homeland Security. That's your government at work. Is that the way you want government working? Not me.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
And let me remind you again that starting next Saturday, which will be April 11th, I will be starting to broadcast live from 10 to noon on Saturdays instead of Sundays. So I hope you will remember to join me. And if you get on my blast list, you'll get a blast, or go to the Facebook page. You can like Lovable Liberal and get the blasts that way. I like to always talk about what I call watch what they're doing instead of what they're saying. And even with this virus going on, or maybe especially with this virus going on, where we are all so focused on what is happening in our own communities with people we know, with how our lives are now and how they will be in the future, we're not paying a whole lot of attention, nor is the news media, to what's really going on out there while we're doing all this other stuff with the virus. So let me start by saying the president is still very focused on the idea that there is a deep state that is out to destroy him. And behind the scenes, those who are close to President Trump say that they expect him to fire more inspectors general because conservative friends of the president have told him that these inspectors general, who, by the way, are nonpartisan, that they're members of the deep state trying to undermine him. And we know that he just fired the inspector general, who, in fact, was key in the whistleblower complaint that triggered the impeachment. His name is Michael Atkinson. The president says he lost confidence in him. The president wrote in a letter to the two intelligence committees, he lost confidence in Michael Atkinson, and of course it had nothing to do with the fact that this was the person who brought forward the whistleblower complaint that ultimately led to impeachment. Now, Trump announced his intent to name a White House aide as the independent inspector general to oversee the $500 billion in corporate aid, and that he wouldn't need the committee that Nancy Pelosi was planning to set up. So he's got his own person that he wants to put in that job, but meanwhile he fired the inspector general who did something that he didn't like. Behind the scenes, we expect him to fire more inspectors general. One of the conservative friends of the president said that inspectors general are part of the U.S. government's regulatory and compliance system that protect the establishment. And that's what they're so worried about. That there is this establishment within the government that is working to defeat Trump. I will tell you, I don't always agree with what a lot of bureaucrats do, but at least they're there knowing what needs to be done. And they have all kinds of protocols for how to get things done. The idea that there is this deep state within the government that is working to destroy the president. This has even been brought up about Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Fauci once sent an email. Remember when Hillary Clinton, when the whole Benghazi thing was going on, and Hillary Clinton spent something like 11 hours in front of a congressional committee answering question after question after question, and everybody said, my God, how did she even manage to live through that? Well, at the time, she was Secretary of State, and Dr. Anthony Fauci sent her an email saying, hey, you did a great job being able to last through all those hours. It is that email that was discovered by those who were trying to dig up something on Dr. Fauci, because God forbid anybody make the president look like he's wrong about anything. And Dr. Fauci is now being accused of being deep state and anti-Trump because he was once complimentary toward Hillary Clinton. I mean, that is disgusting. And it is worth noting that the idea that the inspectors general are part of the deep state that is trying to destroy the president. Guess who leads the group of activists that are putting those notions into the ear of Donald Trump? No less than a woman named Ginny Thomas, who is the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. There is an initiative within the government to purge any officials who are presumed or seen or whispered about as being disloyal to the president. Now, in addition to that, if you're critical of what's going on right now with regard to the virus, you can lose your job, no matter how critical the job might be. In Washington State, an emergency room physician named Ming Lin said he was told on Friday that he was out of a job because he had given an interview talking about what he believed to be inadequate protective equipment and testing going on in the state of Washington. He's out of a job. In Chicago, a nurse was fired after she emailed some of her colleagues that she wanted to wear a more protective mask while she was on duty, that the mask she had been given wasn't one that would give her adequate protection. She was fired for emailing that to her colleagues. In New York, a health system called the New York University Langone Health System warned employees they could be terminated if they talked to the media without authorization. And you know, there's a lot of companies like that. If you get a call from a reporter, you refer it up to the head of PR. You cannot make any public statement. CDC, Centers for Disease Control, guidelines say that you may need to improvise a face mask using a scarf or bandana. And they're telling that to medical personnel. Now, you know that the commander of an aircraft carrier, the Theodore Roosevelt, Captain Brett Crozier, has been escorted off that carrier in Guam, where it made port in Guam, and was removed from his command for sending out a letter calling for the evacuation of about 5,000 crew members off that ship to protect them from an outbreak. There were already some people on the ship who were exhibiting symptoms, and he did try and go through the chain of command and got no response. So he wrote this letter and sent copies to everybody he thought could make a difference, and it got leaked out to the press. And they relieved him of command. The Pentagon says he violated the chain of command. Meanwhile, when he was escorted off the ship, the rank and file members of the Navy on that ship shouted their support for him. But this will now have an effect on military people all over the world. There are commanders who are curtailing operations because of the threat of contagion from the virus. And the chain of command does not seem to be respecting that. And by the way, I believe the news this morning now shows that Captain Crozier has tested positive for the virus. Joe Biden made a comment about the fact that this commander was relieved of duty. Former Vice President Biden, who is the presumptive nominee for the Democrats against Trump in November, asked whether he should face disciplinary action. Biden said, "Donald Trump's acting Navy secretary shot the messenger." A commanding officer who was faithful to both his national security mission and his duty to care for his sailors, and who rightly focused attention on a broader concern about how to maintain military readiness during this pandemic. Because an aircraft carrier isn't going to be very effective if all the people needed to operate it in a time of crisis are down with the virus. Biden said the Navy sent a chilling message to the rest of the fleet about speaking truth to power. The poor judgment here belongs to the Trump administration, not a courageous officer trying to protect his sailors. When Trump was asked about this yesterday at the briefing, the fact that this Captain Crozier had written something like a 5-page letter detailing all of his concerns about what was happening as a result of the virus, Trump's response was that he did support removing Crozier from his duties. And Trump said, with regard to the letter, it wasn't a literature class. The administration is rolling back the auto emissions regulations. The air right now across most of Southern California is looking nice and clear and clean, but that doesn't matter. They've decided to push through the change, asking for the ability to have higher emissions from automobiles instead of lower, and overcoming the fact that California had put in higher emissions and the top three automakers were meeting them. That got overturned. Watch what they're doing. The Keystone Pipeline construction is about to begin. A Canadian company said Tuesday that it plans to start construction of the Keystone XL oil sands pipeline through the Midwest of the U.S. That was being held up for environmental reasons and for lots of other reasons. But the announcement came after the Canadian company secured $1.1 billion in financing from the Canadian provincial government of Alberta to cover construction through the rest of this year and agreements for the transport of over 575,000 barrels of oil per day. And of course, Hobby Lobby, which is strongly anti-abortion and totally pro-life and ultra-conservative. The Colorado Attorney General's office sent a letter to them ordering them to shut down. They are not considered an essential business. There's more that they're doing that they haven't told us about. But I'm going to come back with some really good news for you. Because of the virus, Trump has suspended protections of some of our immigration laws. And there's more. This is Anita Rufus, and this is iHub Radio.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to share some good news with you. First, the good news that I will be on Saturdays from now on, starting next week, from 10 to noon here at iHub Radio. Excuse me. And instead of focusing on the virus and things that have gone wrong and things that are being done right and the fact that in California, Governor Newsom put us in great shape early on so that the curve appears to be leveling out in California, but stay home, wear a mask if you have to go out, be ultra, ultra cautious. But here's some good news in addition to all of the frightening news. There are people individually making a difference right now across the country, and some of the pictures of them are absolutely fabulous, like the mailman who was wearing a costume that looked like a suit of armor as he was walking from house to house making his drop-offs in a particular neighborhood. Like the artists and musicians who are coming together to make art and music. I have been in tears so many times this past week watching these incredible symphony orchestras or pop artists who are in separate locations and coordinating their music to bring, see, it makes me cry just thinking about it, to bring joy and beauty to all of us as we go through this. Three cheers for the teachers who are volunteering to give their time to make online lessons for kids who are at home and who will not be able to go back to school this school year. I applaud the people who work at food banks, especially here in the Valley where we have a lot of homeless and we have a lot of people who, if they're not working their hourly jobs for low wages, they don't have access to food. And the people who are volunteering to help distribute that food. People who are making contributions to organizations that are working to help others. There are organizations to help support farm workers, people who work for minimum wage, artists, musicians, actors, service employees who work for tips. These are people who need our help, and it is something you can do to make a difference. Now, there's a piece of good news. Gay men, bisexual men, and their female partners can now donate blood after a 3-month waiting period instead of a 12-month period. And we need people to give blood, and this was a smart thing to do. And I hope that all of you who can donate blood are reaching out to try and make that happen. There are neighborhoods that are literally holding dance parties and bingo nights, but with a distance. In Bayville, New Jersey, they had a bingo night from the safety of their own backyards, calling out numbers that were drawn over a megaphone. In Berkeley, California, neighbors gathered outside their homes with tambourines in hand to sing together on a block. In Olathe, Kansas, neighbors organized a Taco Tuesday, eating meals at the end of their driveways and relating to their neighbors. In Provincetown, Massachusetts, they gathered at a distance on a beach to serenade one of their neighbors who just turned 100. In a suburb of Atlanta, neighbors were sitting outside in their cul-de-sac at the end of their driveways in beach chairs. There is something called the Happiness Lab, and the woman who runs it said they were taking a page out of all the happiness scientific work. She said there's so much research suggesting that the one thing we really need for happiness is social connection. happy people tend to spend more time with other people. Social distancing doesn't have to mean social isolation. Now, I am thrilled with the reality of the smart thermometer. If you haven't heard about this, they've been actually able to track that this physical distancing policy works because there are these smart thermometers that report people's temperatures right from their wristlet. And the rapid drop in the number of fevers that are recorded in various parts of the country, analyzed by this country company called Kinsa, K-I-N-S-A, closing restaurants and bars and asking people to stay in their homes has produced real results with lower numbers of people with temperatures. I give you permission in all that is going on right now. I give you permission to do nothing. Sit down. Don't feel like you have to be productive. You get a lot of people saying, oh, you're not doing enough with all that extra time. You ought to be cleaning out your closets. You ought to be blah, blah, blah. Becoming a master baker. The pressure is real. Staying inside and attending to your own basic needs is plenty enough to be doing. If you have children at home, that's where your focus needs to be because they're scared too. They see your fear. You need to reassure them that you're all doing what you need to do to stay safe. And I give you permission to be lazy. For me, this period of time has been an absolute gift because I am basically a very lazy person in spite of the fact that I really do get a whole lot done all the time. I really am very lazy. Anyone who knows me can tell you that. And this period of time where we are being asked to stay inside to protect ourselves and our neighbors and our families, to catch up on binge watching or catch up on finally scrubbing down the counter at the back corner of the kitchen or whatever it is that you are finding to occupy your time. I'm reading lots of books. But this is a time where you can be absolutely lazy without guilt. Okay, this week Bill Withers died. He once said, I wouldn't know a Pop-Tart from a Pop-Chart. But when he said, lean on me when you're not strong and I'll be your friend, I'll help you carry on. That's what we need to be saying to each other. Passover starts on the 8th. For Jews, and I will share with you something my son sent to me. It says, commemorating not getting killed by a plague during a plague that you hope you're not getting killed by is probably about as Jewish as you can get. I'll be here next Saturday at 10 o'clock. I hope you will join me. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, on iHub Radio.